Say What? Say What Radio Show. With no agenda. It's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong.
And welcome to the Say What Show. It is June 15th, 2019. My name is Nancy Hopkins. With me is Dolly Howard, Barbara White, and Peter Moon. And I'm just going to turn it over and say to Dolly, Dolly, how are you doing? And then you pass it on.
I'm doing good. Howdy, everybody. Glad to have Barb and Peter on with us. And I'm turning it over to Barb.
Good evening, Peter. Where are you? Are you in New York?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so we're both about a little after six. And Dolly, oh gosh, we are all on Eastern Daylight Time.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm here and glad to be with all three of you. Lovely people. I enjoyed hearing the interview last time with you, Peter, and I hope we get to steer it in, goodness, we could just steer it in dozens of different directions, but I'm eager to talk about Radu and Cesar and Dr. Zen and Romania and Baghdad and just a whole bunch of things. I just can't wait for you to share everything that you can think of about those and others.
Well, let me just jump in here because it was Barbara, Peter, that was, she really is into the story and she really loves you. So she said, you know, I would love to talk to him. And I said, well, I think I can talk to him because I know Mona Radler, who knows him quite well. So I said, all right, so we get together. And I have to tell you that, every time you're coming on, I'm excited because you tell us stories that you don't hear anyplace else. So is there something you want to say to the audience before we start letting Barbara ask you the questions? Because she's the one that started this thing up.
Well, the only thing I think is what we should tell the audience is what she was asking. She was making comments about what she wanted to hear, and that she's talking about characters that are in a book that I published and contributed to and certainly edited the English version of a book called Transylvanian Sunrise by a Romanian author, Radu Sitamar, who works in the most secretive department of Romanian intelligence, known as Department Zero. That's what it's called in the book. And she mentioned some characters from that story. So I suppose, unless Barbara has any specific questions that she wants to ask me, should we start with a summary of the story?
I think that would be great. How you got connected to Radu in the first place and David Anderson. Before we go anywhere, Nancy and Dolly both know my sister, who is now living on a boat with her husband. And speaking of Jan, you know, Linda and Jan know each other. It's a very small world when we get in here. But Linda said, oh, please, please ask him if David Anderson is still alive. And from your most recent conversations, it sounds as if he is. And are you in connection with him?
Well, which, first thing is we should first tell the audience who Dr. David Anderson is before
yes.
we answer the question. And Dr. David Anderson is a pivotal character in my career because he's the one who funded my first trip to Romania. And I start the book off, the English version anyway, by telling my story of me going to Romania at the sponsorship of Dr. David Anderson and the World Genesis Foundation, which he founded. Now, Dr. David Anderson is a time control scientist. He's a time control scientist who walked into my life on August 11th, 1999, into what was then a public forum, a public meeting on the Montauk Project that we used to hold monthly on Long Island with Preston Nichols. And the Montauk Project, of course, was the subject of our last interview about the time travel experiments that occurred at the eastern end of Long Island from during the 70s, climaxing in 1983, August 12th. Now, Dr. David Anderson was a subscriber to my newsletter, the Montauk Pulse, which has still been in print ever since 1993, issued quarterly. People can subscribe to it or find out about it at skybooksusa.com. So Dr. David Anderson he introduced himself to me after the meeting, told me he had a time travel research center on Long Island at that time. It was in an industrial park in Hauppauge, Long Island. And he said that he was interested in working with me. He wanted to take me out to lunch. So we met about a week later, and he began to describe his technology to me in some detail. Even when I first met him and he described his technology to me, I could tell he was for real. He had a background in the Air Force, where he was assigned the job of maintaining government satellites, maintaining their orbit, and because they will drift several meters every year and just drift. There's a drift that occurs in satellite orbits. So basically, he was assigned the task of helping them maintain their orbit. And basically, he got into what he developed and is called time warp theory. Time warp theory is something you can now study, although it's not really called that, but the Time Travel Education Center, because I've taken his work, the fundamental theories of it, which is a long story in itself of how that came about, and dumbed them down so that they can be understood on an eighth grade level. An adult who's reasonably intelligent may have to go over it several times. I certainly did. Of course, I'm spitting it out in a very understandable format for those who are patient and can understand the Pythagorean theorem. Because basically what he has done is reduced time, the definition of time, into distance. And when it's distance, it can be measured geometrically and therefore fits within the realm of algebra and geometry, mathematics. So time can be calculated with ordinary algebra and geometry. And this was the precursor that led to his time research, which I still haven't really mentioned, except that at that time when I met him, he could take the size about a soccer ball and slow it down or speed it up. And he was eventually able, 12 years later, to develop to where he could put humans into such a field. There was a lot of learning curve, but he has a very fast learning curve. So anyway, David was interested in my work because I'd written about time experiments, and he thought they were very plausible and very real, certainly within the realm of science, all of the stuff that I'd published with Preston Nichols. So when he first met me, we sat outside my house. He took me home, took me to lunch, talked about his technology. We must have sat for about 40 minutes talking about tax strategies, because he was developing a foundation. It was going to be a nonprofit foundation for Romanian artists, scientists, and writers. And we were discussing the tax laws, until finally he had to go. And that became the World Genesis Foundation, that was 1999. 8 years later, 9 years later, he would actually, the World Genesis Foundation would sponsor my trip to Romania, where at the same time I had already contracted with the publisher of Radu Cinemar. There's an interesting story is that I had thought that David had arranged for the publication of my book, The Montauk Project in Romanian, but this was a misunderstanding on my part. This goes back into the early, 2001, 2002. There was a editor in Romania named Sorin Hormuz, and he worked for a publication firm. I don't know the name, but his boss said, here's the Montauk Project experiments in time. We want you to review this and see if we should publish it. What's your opinion? So Sorin read it and he came back to his boss and he says, yes, you should publish the book. His boss declined to publish it. So he went off on his own and published it and formed his own publishing house, which is called Daksha Publishing, D-A-K-S-H-A. It's published virtually all of the books that I've authored or co-authored in the Romanian language. So I became a known commodity to some degree in Romania by the time I had arrived there. And when the Montauk Project was published in Romanian, it caught the eyes of Radu Sinemar, who was then working in the secret services, Department Zero. He saw it and he wrote, emailed the author and said, maybe you'd like to look at my book and publish that. And that's the book we now know in English as Transylvania Sunrise. The author published it. They had it translated into English and it was shipped to me. It took me 4 years to read the book. Once I read the book and I started negotiating with Serene to publish it. And right after, within a week after completing the negotiations to publish it in English, I heard from Dr. David Anderson. And it was, he had said 5 years earlier, I won't be able to work with you for 5 years. Well, sure enough, here it was 5 years to the month. And he says, I would like to bring you to Romania, an all expenses paid trip. You can bring a friend if you like. And so that's what happened. I went to Romania in 2008 and got to meet David for the first time in 5 years. I got to meet his Romanian friends. And that's what got me started on my own Romanian adventures, which are, you know, somewhat independent of the book, Transylvania Sunrise, which is a whole nother story in itself. But that is a preamble to how I got involved in all of this.
Good preamble. David.
You had a question about.
Okay.
I wanted to know if he was alive and okay. Yes, he is alive and okay. He is not, I guess what you'd say, involved with the. He ended up putting me on the board of directors. Or from, what do you call it?
Genesis?
They don't call it promoting. They call it nominating me for the board of directors, the World Genesis Foundation, which I now serve on. And he is not a member. On the day he suggested and they voted me in, he disappeared from the World Genesis Foundation. It's like, you know, you deal with it. And of course, I'm not the president, so I don't have to deal too much with it. But my main contribution to the foundation is to go to Romania once a year at the camp called Atlanticron and teach. I basically lecture on sacred Romania, which includes the books that I've written or published. And it also includes me teaching Qigong. I teach Qigong there twice a day when I'm there. And I have various networks and relationships that I've fostered over the years. But David is okay. He's going to work. Support the World Genesis Foundation from the background this year at Atlanticron. So he's busy. He's involved with many what you call non-disclosure agreements, NDAs. So that precludes him from talking much at all. He did give a lecture publicly in 2017. My Romanian in-laws came and gave an event on Long Island, and he was kind enough to Skype in. We didn't see him facially, but he stayed with us for 2 hours, and he talked about different aspects. He also took Q&A from me and a supervised Q&A, supervised by myself, with the audience. Anybody could ask him a question if they wanted to. That's the last I saw David. I talked to him after that at some point. I don't remember. Maybe it was 2 years ago. Maybe it was a year ago. I've heard from him not very often, but just that he'd like to meet with me outside of the project. I don't know what he means by the project, but I said, you name the time and the place, and I will accommodate you. That's the last I've heard from him. That was about a month ago.
You said he wouldn't see you for 5 years and then he shows up practically to the day. And do you suppose he time traveled to see that?
I asked him about that, and he says, you know, I'm not always that good. He says, you know, he said he didn't claim credit. It's just like, you know, he kind of said it and he meant it. I think that he operates sometimes with a knowing that he's not fully aware of. One of his friends in Romania, who's a very deep esotericist, who's also involved with the government there, she said that she figures David's about aware of about 10% of what he's involved in. That's just her, you know, sort of sensitive assessment. That's not an official assessment, that he's got strings into so many things, and that he's serving different causes and whatnot. And somehow we seem linked in fate and destiny. He's also said that, I mean, I told him that I probably understand him better than anyone else, and he said that's probably true.
Well, he certainly is an interesting character, above and beyond or in addition to all the people that are in the Sunrise, Moonrise, Romanian books. And he probably would be an entire program by itself. But let's move on to Radu's writing. First of all, for personal reasons, so I've got all five books. I've read all of them more than once. And I want to know, last time I read something, it said that there was a sixth one in the process. Yes.
I'm working on the sixth one. It's translating, you know, supervising the translation and doing the editing of it. It's a rough book to edit, I mean, to translate. It's got a lot of scientific concepts in it, as did the last one. And sometimes these things are hard to convey in easily understandable English. The upshot of it is that generally Romanians often tell me my books are easier to understand in English than his are in Romanian. And they speak Romanian better than they speak English, because I go to a lot of effort to make them as easy to understand as possible. But this is being worked on. It's called Forgotten Genesis, and it's a book about the history of mankind, of much of which has been forgot.
Oh, goody. There certainly
is. I can also tell you, for those of you who have read the book, there are discs recovered in the third book in the series, Mystery of Egypt, and this book includes the deciphering of some of those discs. It's not a complete, I guess what you'd say, disclosure, because there are very sensitive issues, he says, which can't be disclosed, but there are plenty of them that can. So he's not conveying 100% of what they found out, but a healthy percentage, which is certainly enough to interest the public and the audience.
So Peter, the book you're doing about history, is it history that has been forgotten, or is it history that was told to us that you're correcting, telling it to us properly?
No, it's forgotten history. I haven't even gotten into that aspect of the book. I'm only getting into, you know, sort of the preamble to it. I haven't gotten that far as to what history has been, figured out and what is not. If I continue, you know, talking here, I could maybe give you a sort of a guidepost to what some of the chapters are, if I can pull it up here as I talk to you. So go ahead and ask me another question.
Well, why don't we go back to where you began? And you said, can we do a recap of the stories? Because I don't know how many people have read this. And they're fascinating books. I have a friend and she says, the stranger it is, the more likely you are to believe it. I have no problem believing any of what you've written there. And so go ahead and shoot for it. Let people know what kind of things, what kind of a story it is, what kind of information is in it. And you've already talked about time travel, which many people roll their eyes or their faces, you know, they glaze over. But just go for it.
Okay. Well, you know, when you speak of people glazing over the concept of time travel, first I'll say they're just basically uninformed and not educated. That is why I set up the Time Travel Education Center, which I would encourage anybody who's rolling their eyes to go to the Time Travel Education Center at timetraveleducationcenter.com and learn. And just before we go into that book, I'll just tell you what some of the chapters in that this new book are. The Earth in cross-section, meaning viewing it from a distance. The Flat Earth Delusion, he talks about the Flat Earth and how ill-conceived that whole concept is of the Flat Earth, people going into two dimensions rather than four. He talks about humanity's origin on Earth from the cosmic to the quantum level. That's currently the chapter I'm working on. He talks about splitting evolution, genome reinvention, Shambhala, Hyperborea, Planetary Council of Teotihuacan, that's the, I guess, the connected to the Mexicans, Atlantis, construction of the pyramids, the Sphinx, Troy, the reabsorption of the Mayan civilization, and he ends it with the Anunnaki, a delicate problem. That's an overview of the sixth book.
Wow.
To answer your question. Okay, go ahead. So anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I go right ahead.
Okay, so from here, I'll talk about Transylvania Sunrise, the first book in the series. And Transylvania Sunrise begins, I begin the English version with my adventures to Romania and the David Anderson connection, and how the hell do I end up at this thing called the Romanian Sphinx, because there is a Sphinx in Romania, and this is sort of a central theme of this book. And when I arrived, I got to visit the Sphinx, I guess it would have been...
Was this before the books or after you started with the books when you visited the Sphinx?
The book was, I just signed the contract to write the book. I'd read it, but I hadn't published it yet. That would take another year to finish it. So anyway, because I'd read about it, I said, it was my second full day in Romania. I figured out how to ride the bus with a friend I was with and travel to the Sphinx, which is, I have to say, it's one of the most dynamic adventures I've ever done, because you get to this small town, it's a mountain town of Bushteni, and you take this cable car going straight up the Carpathians, straight up, and it's like you're looking down, and it's like, it's awesome. I remember doing the trolley ride at Disneyland when I was a kid. They used to have a cable car there at Disneyland that would go through the Matterhorn. That was nothing compared to this. And you're looking over these steep mountains, and finally you go above the tree line, and you get high up, and you get out, and you walk about 100 yards, and you're at the Sphinx, this stone edifice looks some 50,000 years old, they say. And there's another stone monument before you get there called Babale, which means old women. They're like these rocks protruding from a single spot. And the Sphinx is, if you look at it from one particular angle, it has the profile of a man with an ancient Dacian headdress. And you see an eye, a profile. On the other side, you see what looks like a griffin. Lionesque creature. And this is the Romanian Sphinx. Now, the whole premise of this book is that a chamber was discovered beneath the Romanian Sphinx, but equidistant between Babele and the Romanian Sphinx. I don't know if it was 300 yards down. I don't remember the exact distance, but it was quite a ways into the ground. And there was a chamber that was discovered by ground penetrating radar that was special to the Pentagon from a Pentagon satellite in outer space. And when I first learned of the Pentagon satellite discovering this chamber, I said, oh, they've got to be using Dr. David Anderson's technology to maintain the orbit. So maybe David knows about it. Maybe he doesn't. I tended to think that he did. But in any case, this is the Romanian Sphinx. And this chamber the only reason the chamber can be discovered or actually accessed is due to what happens at the beginning of the book. It's the birth of a very unique and remarkable individual whose name we are given is Caesar Brad. And Caesar Brad is a baby who has an umbilical cord that is so long and thick they cannot cut it. So they finally have to get a saw to cut it. And they do cut it. But because it's an irregular birth, they report it to Romanian Securitate, security, which they are instructed to do. The doctors under communism, and this is birth is probably in the 70s, say, okay, so the security comes and checks the baby, and they bring with him with them a doctor who you alluded to earlier as Dr. Zhen. Dr. Zhen is a Chinese national. And I mean Chinese national, he's a citizen of what we knew then as Red China, now known as China. And he was sent by the Chinese government as part of an exchange program. His expertise was paranormal. And he was there to set up the paranormal department and to evaluate what are called K events. K events would be known to the TV crowd as X-Files events, anomalous things that occurred. So while he was there as part of it to set up the paranormal department, which was Department Zero of the Romanian government, in return, the Romanians, who had a very good education system, would educate several Chinese youth. So there was an exchange program. So this is Dr. Zhen is examining this young baby. And as Caesar would grow up, the security made a arrangement with his parents. They would pay the parents extra money if they would report on their kid. In other words, any strange occurrences, anything happens with the kid, please let us know. And we'll pay you an extra so much a month, which the father was very ready to agree because times were not always so easy in communist Romania. But in any event, the story begins with Caesar Brad growing up and going through various phases of training he's being groomed to become the head of Department Zero by Dr. Zhen. And eventually he takes the head of Department Zero, and he is approached one day. Now, he has a senior who's a very helpful character named General Obadia. General Obadia is part of a team that set up Department Zero and financed it independently, not through government financing, through shrewd trading and I think a company in Uruguay or something like that, if I recall properly. But in any case, Caesar is approached one day by a very mysterious and a man who turns out to be very evil. His actual name is Signor Mazzini. Signor is not his first name. I didn't know his first name. Signor is just like Mr., like in Spanish. It's an Italian designation. He's Italian. And he claims to be part of the highest lodge of Italian Freemasonry. And he also claims to be a member of the Bilderberger group. And he speaks fluent Romanian, which is not typical for Italians. It's not easy for Italians to speak Romanian. It's easy for Romanians to speak Italian or any other Romance language because Romanian is the mother language, not Latin, not Italian, not Spanish. That's why we get Romance is from Romanian. But there's a lot of obfuscation about that. But in any case, he speaks fluent Romanian, and he basically tells Caesar that they want to get – they've discovered this chamber underneath the Sphinx, and they want him to – and there are his people at the Pentagon that tell him this. These would be Freemasons at the Pentagon would be reporting on this. It's not going on standard government channels through the American executive office, which would have been George Bush at the time, nor is it going through the Romanian executive office, which is now no longer a communist country. And he says that we want to know what's under there. We need your help to get access to it. At the same time he's asking for Caesar's help, there's also sort of an ominous aspect, because Caesar knows that if he turns him down or frowns at him the wrong way, he will likely be displaced from his position. So it's sort of a situation that he can't win. So he basically cooperates with him. And this is, this hits a whole, what do you call it, backfire. Because the Americans have technology to actually access this chamber. See, it's a chamber that they can't penetrate with ground penetrating radar. They know there's something there, but why can't they see it? It's an irregularity. It's an anomaly. So the Americans have the technology to get at it. And of course, it's Romanian territory. And you just can't, you know, it's not politically prudent or wise to just invade a country and start digging, particularly when this is being done on the sly, not through any normal military channels. So basically what happens is they're penetrating the area and they're getting close, but they have a lot of problems with force fields and barriers. And in the midst of this, the war in Iraq is happening. And in Iraq, the Americans had independently discovered a similar chamber to what was beneath the one in Romania. And the Americans discovered it first. And this chamber was basically a holographic technology chamber that was some 50,000 years old, but was more like modern technology. And it would read out things holographically, like a map or whatever. So at the time they actually breached this chamber in Romania, and the only way they were able to breach it was because there was like a hand, sort of a hand bioidentification that somebody had to put the hand in. And they'd lost about three people in one of the force fields, so it was a very sensitive issue. When Caesar put his hand in it, it recognized his hand, and the force field opened, and they were able to access the chamber. I will tell you what was found in the chamber, but first I will tell you that this holographic technology in Iraq indicated and showed that there was a similar installation being opened up in Romania.
Can I interrupt you here?
Sure.
There certainly, when the war in Iraq broke out, there were rumors on the alternative news that there was a real reason underground why the war had been fabricated. And I wondered if you knew or thought that the holographic information that was discovered in Baghdad was the real cause of going into the war.
No, because they discovered it accidentally or serendipitously. It was not for that reason that they went in. There were tales of other sacred or, you know, similar type stories that they might have gone in for. But it was not for this. This was a byproduct of whatever they were going for. But there were stories that they were going in to get it sealed areas and stuff. So that's at least as far as I know.
Okay.
So anyway, when the soldiers guarding the place in Iraq see that there's something going on in Romania, they reported up channels. And this goes up all the way to the commander in chief, which was George W. Bush at the time. And I can imagine him reading this book and saying, "Oh God, I was involved in that." Maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. But in any case, it went back down command channels. He asked his counterpart in Romania, the president of Romania, "What's going on? We have American troops over there. I don't know what the hell they're doing over there. Can you tell me?" And the Romanian president says, "We have American troops here? I didn't know that." So he goes down his command channels and says, "What are American troops doing here? What are you people doing?" And this is a very tense situation. first between the Romanian president and Department Zero. And this has to be smoothed over by General Abadia, because the president is virtually, not the only one, but practically the only one in Romania who even knows about Department Zero. And here these people are operating behind his back. And they're doing this to be expedient. They're not doing it to be deceitful. They're doing it under a lot of tension and under the pressure of this Signor Mazzini, influential Masonic character. So in any case, what happens is the Romanians sort out their own confusion on this, and they all get on the same page. But then there's a lot of tension between the American contingent, which is now coming straight from command. It's no, and the Pentagon, and the Pentagon, but now this Masonic influence is becoming very, it's dangling in the wind, because the Masonic influence no longer has as strong an influence. In fact, this guy, Signor Mazzini, has to escape. He has to get out of there because he's in danger, because when the American commands find out that he's been meddling, he does not want to be on the scene. So this lessens the Masonic influence. And this is a very important point, because although the Mason orchestrated the opening of this chamber, he no longer could take advantage of it. He helped them open it, but he had to skedaddle out of there. So now you had Americans and Romanians with a tense situation over sovereignty and who owns this, who can do what. And they're like, there's just a lot. And these two cultures are very different. Romania is very westernized in some respects, but it's also a completely different culture that hasn't moved forward 100% with the capitalistic system. They also had affiliations with China and Russia, so they were a communist nation. But what came out of all of these tense arguments and discussions, which were eventually all worked out, is that Romania became a full-fledged member of NATO for the first time in the history of NATO. And you can see this in the newspapers of the time. They became allies instead of whatever they were before that. And this, of course, created some polarization between Russia and Romania, which exists to this day. There is a commerce and interaction between the two countries, but Romanians have never trusted Russians because they took their national treasure in World War I and never returned it. So Romanians resent this very deeply from Russia, which was not then the Soviet Union. So in any case, you had this alliance between Romania and America, and this cooperation led to the opening of this tunnel. So a lot of what you read about in this first book is the political intrigue and scenario surrounding it. Eventually, Cesar Brad picks out a character named Radu Sinemar to write this book. And he allows him to visit the chamber for about an hour so he can actually write the book, and tells them all this story. And they also relay a story where there was this monk. His name was Father Arseni Boca. He's the most famous religious person in Romania. He passed away and right as communism fell. But the dictator of communist Romania, Nicolae Ceausescu, he kept suppression on the church. And the Romanians are very orthodox as a general rule. They are very hold to their belief in the Orthodox Church. And this church was very suppressed during communism. And Ceausescu would manipulate things so that Arseni Boca would have to travel from place to place and wouldn't be a fixed position any too long and gather up too much of a healing, because he was a following, because he was a very charismatic character and could look into people's future. Yet he would go to Arseni Boca and get futuristic readings from him. And the last reading he got from him was that Ceausescu would have to change his ways very drastically or he was going to die. And Ceausescu didn't like this. Arseni Boca died soon thereafter. People believe that he was poisoned. He predicted his own death, but he said a great discovery will come to this land. He actually had interviewed Caesar Brad, who was brought to him by his superiors to look at him, and he saw that Caesar would be involved in a great things happening in his country. Not long after Arsini Boca died, Ceausescu was deposed and executed by the military. So, and then what happened was when they opened this chamber, Radu reported on this, there were huge tables, like 6 feet high. So you had to get up on a chair to get them, and they would have a layout where they would be in section panels. And if you put your hand over one, it would do a readout of your DNA. And the closer you would put your hand to the table, it would read it out more microscopically from the molecular to the atomic level. And another panel and or another table would show a readout of a species from a particular life form. And it would give a readout of the planet it came from, a holographic depiction of the planet and the star system and galaxy it came from. So you would have this. If you put your hand simultaneously over another panel, it would give another animal with another star system and planet, and it would also show a hybridization of the two life forms. So this was an extensive DNA blueprint laboratory, is what it was in that respect. And this is just a fast, quick version of his escort being escorted through the chamber. Then he goes to a place called the projection hall, which is the core place of this chamber. And the projection hall has a viewing area where you can see in holographic form the history of the world. The history of the world for him was presented in about 40 minutes, a summarized history of the world. And it was all in concordance with his own biology and his intuition. So it was a biofeedback friendly history. So the history you watch is different than the history I watch. If I'm more interested in China and you're more interested in South America, our views of the history of the world will be contoured that way, unless the device intuits that maybe we're supposed to look at other parts of the world than what we're interested in. I don't know. I haven't seen any of these things myself, but this is the story. Within the projection hall are three mysterious tunnels. And we learn in the later books that one tunnel goes to a similar installation beneath the Giza Plateau in Egypt. There's another tunnel that goes to a similar installation in Tibet, with side tunnels that go to Baghdad, where there's a similar installation, which we've already discussed, and one to Mongolia. So there is another tunnel that goes into the earth, the inner earth, the inside the earth. So the one that goes inside the earth is the subject of the book that I just published in January called Inside the Earth, the Second Tunnel. The Mystery of Egypt, the first tunnel, was the third book in the series, and a future book will probably go into the third tunnel, which goes to Tibet. So this is an overview of the first book. If you have any comments or questions, this is the time.
I do. Dolly and Nancy, do you have any? I do want to refer to
Transylvania. I'm going to go get a glass of water while you ask this question. So if I don't answer, I'll be right back. Keep talking.
I'm going to ask the question if he leaves.
Ask the question. I can hear you.
Oh, okay. I was wondering, have you ever been to the inner earth?
Have I ever been to the inner earth? Not as described in the book. I've had some interesting encounters in my dreams, but not as it's discussed here, or not as it's discussed in other literature on the topic. No, I have not.
But the inner earth to you is a place where there's another civilization?
That's what's given in the book. Yes, there is another civilization. In
in the book, and there's it's quite populated, and it's quite in another dimension. It's I guess the most exalted aspect would be Shambhala, which is discussed and actually viewed briefly in the fifth book, Inside the Earth. It will be discussed again in the sixth book, Forgotten Genesis, which I'm working on now, and I haven't gotten to that aspect. It's a very heartwarming and head-warming concept that is presented with Shambhala. And I could give my own, I guess, application of it, but yeah, it's sort of I don't know if euphoric is the way to describe it, but a euphoria or a great joy within all of us that exists, and it's the potential to access that. And that's what these books are really all leading to in their own circuitous way, because they are circuitous, they're intriguing. Each book is a completely different angle you have similar characters, somewhat similar subjects, but they're completely different stories. And, you know, it's far, you know, the only thing I can think, it's like, if you're talking about sports, it's like, one's like baseball, one's like football, one's like hockey, one's like basketball. They're all different. They're very different, very different games. So it's a very rich and colorful series of books.
I'm sorry, Nancy, was that you or Dolly?
I actually think you got a feedback. Go ahead, Barbara.
Okay. All right. In Sunrise, David talks about there was reference to an encrypted message that was roughly translated as "nothing happens in this world by mistake." And after you had met later with David Anderson, and he said that there was a deeper meaning that was also encrypted in that message. And I wondered if that was ever revealed. These books are full of spiritual training and spiritual information. And, you know, talking about markers along the spiritual path where we want to be and how we want to improve as human beings. And I wondered, did David ever reveal that? Do you know anything?
Yes. I can answer the question. He did. That was a whole... Okay. I forget the year, but it might have been during the time when it was during the hiatus when he wasn't going to be able to talk to me. And he had sent me a postcard from Tel Aviv. And it was, you know, hope you're well, look forward to coming to one of your meetings or something. And then there was all these letters written in gibberish, and then they were crossed out with lines through. And I said, what the hell is this? So I took the postcard, I scanned it, I put it into my newsletter, the Montauk Pulse, and I sent it out. And within 24 hours of sending out that letter, that newsletter, I got a phone call from a friend of mine at Montauk, a very good friend, and her boyfriend. She read it. She showed him the code, and he was good at breaking codes. And he's the one that translated the code for me. It came from Montauk. I mean, this was just a guy at Montauk who liked codes. And it came back to me within 24 hours. And he basically said that the decoding of it was an FDR quote. In only, I think he said in politics, and David said something else in life or whatever. In politics, nothing happens by accident. If it happens, you can bet it was planned that way. So I wrote this back to David. I told him that we decoded it. And he wrote back to me and said, there is a deeper meaning. That was just an initial code to get it by the Israeli post office. And basically, there was a deeper code. I was never able to figure it out. And I had this given to top code breakers. I mean, top code breakers in the industry, in the government, whatever, that was, and they could not break the code. They couldn't understand it. Really sharp people. So eventually, what, and I forget if this came to me in writing or verbally, but he did tell me that what had happened, the reason he sent that is he was feeling very nervous, very much in danger that he was not going to make it. He was going to be exterminated and that his technology was going to die with him. And if there was anybody who could get him, who could get the technology known and understood, it would be me. And he said that the code was to lead me to where I could find it, which I think he meant at the time, the U.S. Patent Office. And this was very peculiar because what am I going to do with a patent application or a patent for a time reactor? You know, I mean, this is not my field. So I said, why is he, this was very confusing to me. You know, it's like, you know, putting you ladies, I don't know your physical status, but putting you into the ultimate fighting championship, you know, it's probably not suited towards your, you know, your physicality, unless there's something about you I don't know. You know, it's not what you would expect. So I said, well, why is he doing this? Later, I asked him in an interview, in a public interview I did, and he kind of skirted the whole issue. He skirted the whole issue. Perhaps for my protection, I don't know. Years later, and it was many years later, I was able to decipher his actual time travel science that I had lectured to me in 2009. Didn't understand it all, understood some of it. I was able to piece it together in 2015. And then I created what was called the Time Travel Education Center, where I dumbed it down. And as part of that, I first put it in a written newsletter, which he loved. He says, that is so, you've broken down so simply. Nobody's had the patience to do this before. He says, can I use this when I talk or teach in universities? I said, certainly you can. Because it was his work. I just dumbed it down. So this is now available in the Time Travel Education Center. There has since been an overture to me by a consultant to a space agency to do something with time travel. And I figure that if I had a team, I might be able, of scientists and engineers, I might be able to do something with it because I have a very unique understanding of it. But that's partly wishful thinking, but that's kind of what happened with that mysterious postcard, and it's still a mystery. And there has been, you know, this idea, I see somebody has approached me. This is a developing situation, although it's, I would say, percentage-wise, I would say at this stage, and I'd say it has a 10 for 15% chance of happening.
Well, I have a question I'd like to ask you later on, but we're talking about time travel again, and I do have a number of questions about time travel, but Ernest T. Carr and Nikola Tesla were to have developed a saucer, and supposedly they went to the military, and supposedly, of course, the military was totally disinterested in it. They had... What people would do would get into the saucer, and Carr and Tesla said, you know, when you go where you're going, put something in your pocket, like pick up a stone or a piece of grass or something, because when you come back here, you will not remember that you were there. And so when people would, or someone, I can't remember the story completely, but basically whoever got into the saucer and went wherever they went came back and they had, I think, stones or grass in their pockets because they had no memory. And it indicated to me that there was some sort of time travel going on with the saucer. Now, I don't know that that's true, but there certainly is a small, not well-known legend about that. And when Margaret, I think her name was Storm, their secretary, there was a long interview by her in the 50s. It was very poor quality. But she talked about this, and there are pictures of the saucer with Carr standing outside of it. Do you know anything about that? And
I've never heard the story. No, I never heard the story, so I can't add it to
okay.
it.
Okay, so we don't know if they were doing time travel.
No, I don't know anything about that.
Okay, all right. Well, I can erase that one. All right, so you don't know what the deeper encryption is yet, maybe.
Well, I just told you what it was.
Oh, about... And the
encryption was pointing to the patent office, the U.S. patent office, to me to get the patent, to look there okay. to get the patent.
Okay,
That's what it was, he told me. That doesn't mean that he didn't show me the code, but he said that's what it was for. Later, when I brought it up in a public interview, he skirted the issue entirely. And in actuality, he later was to give me the patent application, which is now available to anybody who wants to get it. They can go to the blog at the timetraveleducationcenter.com and download the patent application. And since that, because that patent has been sequestered, and you can even look it up in the U.S. I forget what they're called, but there's the U.S. government has a right to sequester or to classify patents if they affect the national security. So they're, you know, it's totally within the realm of logic that, that this stuff happens by the government. So he also wrote to me later and said that there were some 20 or 15 other patents on the subject. But the primary one for the time reactor is now anybody can download it if they want. But you won't find it on the U.S. patent rolls because it's been sequestered. But
right.
You can shut the patent application number and all that.
The Transylvania, I'm going to sort of jump away from time travel and the patent, and that's all very interesting. It seems like either I was listening to you somewhere or maybe it was another interview by someone where actually during the interview and the picture, it was, I don't know if it was a Skype or what it was, but anyway, there was actually a showing of the documents that you're discussing. Am I correct in that?
Well, they have been shown. I mean, you can get them, you can look at them.
Yeah.
It's not secret anymore.
Well, and that's pretty cool for the ones that are, you know, very scientifically minded and really understand some of these things.
It's
that's
hard for, one of the challenges for scientists is they have been so indoctrinated in how to think that they don't often either think for themselves or get enough separation of their preconceived thinking to get past it. All of this stuff is based on a book, not a book, but a part of a book called Space-Time Physics by John Archibald Wheeler. And I think it's Hugh Everett is the other author. But in any case, Space-Time Physics talks about something called the invariance of the space-time interval, which is time distance.
Oh, it looks like it's time for a break.
Somebody needs to go on mute. Should I keep talking?
No. I think Nancy's going to invite us to, she's going to play some music, and we're going to get a drink of water or whatever we need to do for a couple minutes, and then we will return.
Okay.
And then we'll get to the books again. I'm excited about getting back to Moonrise and Sunrise and the tunnels. And I want to ask you if you have had time travel experiences, but we'll do that after the break.
Okay, this is 3 minutes and 36 seconds.
body in the moment where there used to be a school. It's a tiny business left. Don't let the cattails pull you down in the bottom when nothing is born. Sleeps a silver dollar with your face there on. Wish I could trace the frowning compass of your mouth. Drop a mercury down a Roman drain in summer moss. Last sign of Albion, they'll use you for centuries to come. They'll steal your patterns for the sun. Don't feel it too shy when you see your face on their money. Sleeps a red planet in the galaxy of a lion star. Rippers every dinner and a chimney machine. Bubble up.
Welcome back to the Say What Radio Show. It's produced by Cosmic Reality Radio. My name is Nancy Hopkins. It's June 15th, 2019. We have Dolly Howard with us, Barbara White, and Peter Moon, who is covering such fascinating information. Dolly, did you have anything that you wanted to ask? Because once these people get going, you know, they're not going to have to interrupt them. Oh, wait a minute. I better unmute them. Oh, I'm sorry, Dolly.
Well,
see, you can't get a word in edgewise. I even muted you.
Yeah, really. Nobody lets me talk. And Barb's being such a good host, I'm just keeping my mouth shut and sitting in the corner listening.
Yeah, me too.
So I got nothing.
Nothing? Okay.
Nothing.
Barb, you back up?
I'm up. Yes, okay. Yes. Thank you. Peter, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, shall we get back to it?
All right. I was saying something, but when some audio went splooey, so I don't remember where that was. I was talking about the patent and the application for the patent and all of that sort of thing. But we can move back to what's going on in Romania. And I should also comment that Radu is very interested in meeting David Anderson. It doesn't claim to know him. And David's been told he's met Radu, but he doesn't seem to, not necessarily met him under that name, but I don't really know. And Radu wants to meet him, says his work is the most interesting aspect of my own work, is David's work. So he's very interested, and maybe the two of them can meet someday. I don't know. But in any case, we should move on to the second book in the series, Transylvania Moonrise.
Well, before we do that, I just have a couple of sort of general questions. And one is, it's interesting that the Sunrise and Moonrise take place, well, the projection hall and the chamber, they're in Transylvania. And in the books, I think it's the first one, Sunrise, there is reference to the fact that after the Americans get there and they set up the installations and so on, that it's very difficult to get there. And there's a lot of Area 51 kind of thing where you can't get through. However, local people know the back roads and trails, and they can get to that area. And I'm wondering, do you have any thoughts about the fact that maybe some of those people actually had knowledge of some of the things that are hidden or had ways of getting in there? I think about the Transylvania stories, Dracula, that kind of thing, and wonder if some of those things were created to keep people away until it was time for these to be discovered. What are your thoughts on that?
Let me clarify first. This chamber is not in Transylvania. It is in the Buceg or Bucegi Mountains. We call it Bucegi. In Romanian, they'd say Buceg Mountains, which are in the Carpathians. And that the Carpathians are the border between Wallachia and Transylvania. If you go to the east and then up, our Carpathians go to the east and then they start going northward. This sort of town that's barely in Transylvania called Brasov. And Brasov features a castle which is called, incorrectly, Dracula's Castle. It is a tourist magnet. Dracula never lived there. He might have stayed there for a short period of a week or two, but he never lived there. It was never his castle. This is a huge distraction. Perhaps it's a good distraction to keep people out of Transylvania, the core of Transylvania. The only reason they picked this castle because it's barely in Transylvania, and Transylvania is a selling point of a name. But Dracula was not from Transylvania. He was from Wallachia. He was the prince of Wallachia, which is a whole southern region, which is now it's oil fields, it's farming. He did found the city of Bucharest. He had a fortress, not a castle, well north of Bran Castle, which is called Pulinari Fortress. And Pulinari Fortress was on the border between, in the mountains, between Wallachia and Transylvania. And he was there to basically keep the Turks, the Ottomans, out of Transylvania. And he did this for the Habsburgs. The Habsburgs were those who ruled Transylvania as part of the Habsburg Empire. And they were a Hungarian, Austria-Hungarian contingent or royal family. They had imprisoned Dracula's father. Dracula was born in Transylvania. I believe he was born in Deva, in Hunedoara Castle. That's a castle he was later imprisoned in himself. So that, he would not have had access to these tunnels per se because these tunnels were inaccessible. With regard to my own adventures there, I've talked to people in the local town of Busteni who remembers at the time all this was taking place. There were hordes of Americans staying in the hotel that led right up to this, where you take the cable car up to the Sphinx, a bunch of Americans. And the locals were told not to talk about this. So there was certainly something going on there. If it was not exactly like Radu describes, it was very similar. As far as accessing this place, there has been such camouflage done, both with natural camouflage and with hyperdimensional camouflage, that there's no way you're going to find this place unless those on the inside want you to find it. So if the character Dracula, the historical Dracula, was to access this area, it would be by the grace of those on the inside, which is a whole nother story in and of itself. I should add that I do have a friend who's in Transylvania now. He is shooting a movie. He's Romanian, and he's shooting a movie about, I think it's called Grigori, which is an esoteric term, which is where we get the word aggregate, but it refers to an aggregate of consciousness, but where he features Dracula at the Sphinx, and he's trying to introduce esoteric Romania via the character of Dracula, which he describes in Alfred Hitchcock language as a MacGuffin. Hitchcock used the word MacGuffin to what you draw people's attention to. It has nothing to do with the movie. You know, it might be a sexy movie star you open with, but you're trying to drag the audience in with this. So he's dragging the audience in with this Dracula, which is a fascinating character to people. But when you get into esoteric Romania, you can sweep Dracula by the wayside, because he amounts to a huge distraction. And he protected Romania, Transylvania, on two counts. One was by distracting everybody so people don't look at the sacred aspect and they don't bother it. And he also kept the Turks out of sacred Transylvania by putting them on pikes and impaling them and killing them and scaring the hell out of them. So he was a protector of Transylvania, even though he was really not, a prince of that principality or even a citizen. So that's one aspect of Dracula, which you can sweep under the boards.
So my question was kind of about, do you suppose that these stories in this oh scary Transylvania thing was created, and you talked about the esoteric Romanians, and that's exactly what I'm thinking. Maybe these things were created in order to keep people out. And so you very virtually have referred to that when you talk about how Vlad was impaling whoever. Okay, so there are really, what was the term you used? It wasn't esoteric Romanians, was it? What did you call the mystical folks?
I didn't. I don't think I did.
Oh, but. I thought. Okay. I took it on a totally different track than when you were speaking. Okay. Well, Transylvania. I just found it interesting, and I thought there might be some kind of, if there were mystical people like Garcini. And well, I just
he was him. In the church. He was in the church. Yes, there are esoteric.
He was a mystic.
Yeah, he was. But I'm saying he wasn't necessarily connected to the other people. And there's a great mystical tradition in Romania.
That's what I'm after. Right.
Yeah, but I would tell you, for the most part, not 100% part, but for the most part, it's a distraction. Because what I have found and wrote about in my own writings on the subject are, while you won't find them in any, certainly in any American movies on the subject, everything is just like everybody's missing the forest for the trees. And I only discovered it experientially by being there. And this is the tradition of the Solominare. The Solominare represents the real esoteric wisdom of Transylvania. I did not mention it in this lecture. I mentioned it in other lectures, but not in this one. So the Solominare, by tradition, are creatures from the inner earth. They are initiated. They are highly evolved. And they will appear as shepherds or sheep or beggars, and they will come as a beggar and test your heart. They will ask you for an offering, testing the generosity of your heart. First thing I encountered in Romania was a beggar. I didn't give him anything for a lot of good reasons. However, when I learned the tradition, it took me a few years to get back and find a beggar in the same general location that gave him, you know, more than he expected. And he blessed me, you know, all the way to heaven. And things began to happen for me in that country. Because by tradition, the Romanian, the Solomonari, if they test your heart and you pass the test, they will give you the heart of Romania. Where I got the heart back, at least so far, is on my third pilgrimage to the sacred capital of ancient Transylvania, Sarmizegetuza, I met the woman who was to be my wife. So I was not intending any of this. It just happened. And that would change my life in many positive respects. So that was like, I was like, wow. Now, Radu does not write it. He never mentions the Solomonari. And the Solomonari, but everybody he writes about and the whole theme he writes about is written as if it's being orchestrated by the Solomonari. That's the incredible thing that he doesn't mention. I mention it because it's as plain as day.
Can you expand a little bit? You say these are the inner earth people that are interacting with the outer earth people, and the inner earth people have
by
some...
tradition. By tradition, they will take you into the underground and initiate you, and the archetypal example of this is the patron god of Romania known as Zalmoxis. Zalmoxis is a word which means, if you translate it literally, it means leaping god or transcending god. Zalmoxis was by tradition was a human being who was taken into the inner earth by the Solomonari, initiated for 4 years, at which point he emerged as a god. And he went on to inspire / found the religions which became Zoroastrianism, Judaism, and Christianity, and perhaps some more. He was, the word moxie, the Yiddish word moxie, evidently comes, they don't know the etymology of it. It comes from Zalmoxis. The ancient traditions of Judaism are very misrepresented in as far as where they come from. According to my research, it came out of Judaism originated in its most recent form in Gerona, Catalonia, Spain. And it migrated to Jerusalem, migrated back to Catalonia. But originally, it would have come from the East, from Romania. The Catalonian language is much more similar to Romanian than it is Spanish. It's its own language. So these are the ancient peoples, because in Transylvania Sunrise, he mentions that humanity, in order to survive, had to recede into Transylvania because it's surrounded by mountains. It was protected from the Ice Age. In addition to being protected from the Ice Age, it had underground tunnels, where the temperature remains at, you know, in the 50s, 50 degrees or whatever it is, 55 degrees Fahrenheit approximately. And you've got water supply under that. So, you know, human beings could survive in that atmosphere. And then when the Ice Age ended, it gradually came out and brought its ancient knowledge with it. There's a small town called Sumera in Transylvania, which is said to be the ancient Sumeria, the inspiration for what became Sumeria. So this is where the knowledge came from. It was the original language. It was the original culture. And this is part of what is taught in the fourth book, Secret Parchment. But you can also find corroboration of this. It's the history that we don't learn.
So it's essentially the history that has been forgotten, that was not forgotten.
I don't think he's writing about that in this new book. That's different yet.
I'm just saying that so much of history is because it's been forgotten. But in this case, the inner earth people went in to get protected, but then came back out, but they carried the knowledge with them. Is that correct?
Well, you could look at it that way, and that's probably to some degree true. I'm not talking about the inner earth people. I'm just talking about human beings in general. where, because they had to recede into Transylvania, not necessarily the inner earth. They had to recede into Transylvania or into the caverns below it to survive the Ice Age. So therefore, this is not necessarily the inner earth population, although there would have been most probably a commingling. So definitely we have a hidden history. It is a hidden history. It is a forgotten history. It's also a manipulated history, because there have been efforts to manipulate the Romanian language. For example, the Romanian language is, they use the Latin alphabet. But, you know, about 150 years ago, they used the Cyrillic alphabet. So there was an effort to change it to the Latin alphabet and say that the language came from Latin, which it really didn't. Latin is a official language. It's not really, you know, there's something called Vulgar Latin, which is the common tongue, which is more like Romanian. Of course, the languages have changed over the years as well, but there's been an effort to obscure. In fact, I could tell you that the earlier version of Romanian was Gothic. The Gothic language is basically unknown. The history of the Goths has been wiped out. You'll read about the Ostrogoths and the Visigoths, which were the, you know, followed the Goths. But the whole history of the Goths has been wiped out, as has their language, which is tied to the ancient Romanian language, Dacian language. So
excuse me, but are you familiar with the Red Rus of Russia?
No, I don't know that.
Well, there, you know, I was a Russian student out of university, and it just struck me just stupid that I really didn't know about the indigenous people that were there before history started recording. And this was a very mystical civilization. And I was just wondering if you'd ever heard of them, because it could be that the group of people that we're talking about that had to retreat into the mountains and in the caves may be similar or the same as the Red Rus people, because we know so little about them. Very mystical.
And I don't know the Red Rus people, but I know the Siberian shamans emanated from the region of Bulgaria, which is the ancient Thracian or Proto-Thracian culture, which is part and parcel of Romania. Bulgaria is south of Romania, and the traditions of through a religion called Tengriism. And this I learned in Bulgaria. Bulgaria was a central culture just like Romania, and it migrated into Russia, into China, into India with a Vedic culture.
Wow, that's astounding. Thank you for that piece of information. Now, the Red Rus people, according to Anastasia, who is a Russian mystic and up in the tundra of Siberia, she said that, okay, that they just simply disappeared. In essence, what I got from it was that they went basically interdimensional, you know, so they phased out of this reality. But she
that
said,
is very similar to the inner earth culture of which they, that could be them. I just, I remember the Anastasia books. I sold a lot more than I read. You know, I didn't really have the luxury to read them, but I'm familiar with her.
What she's saying is that that the Red Rus right now are reemerging into the 3D, into this third dimensional. And essentially it's being like people are waking up. There's something I know. And it's, you know, the secrets, a lot of secret stuff, magic
it's
stuff.
It's a similar theme, because the whole world has to wake up. It's not going to wake up all in one place.
Yes, and it's fascinating how, you know, the intricacies of the way that it's all a weave, it's all woven together. So in my question also was that could these people that had gone into the inner earth maintain the 3D connection and be side by side the people in the inner earth who live there, who are simply in a different frequency, and so therefore maybe moving faster than the 3D people can you know.
Well, there are connections between the two cultures. You know, to get too technical or detailed is a little pointless right now because we're not going to get it right.
True, true. Okay, I'm going to let Barbara continue. Or you, I think I interrupted you, but I was curious as to that connection.
Well, I had finished the thread. I had said I was heading towards the second book in the series, Transylvania Moonrise. And what's important about this book is it starts with newspaper articles that are translated in the English version from Romanian into English. They're newspaper accounts that... Okay, we're muted. Okay, so there are newspapers account of corroborating that that this story did take place or something like it took place. It corroborates different elements of the story in the regular newspapers because the publisher received a lot of communication from people corroborating the story as well, from former intelligence officers and whatnot. Now, the book begins with the publisher receiving a mysterious phone call from a man telling him that he wants to talk to Redu Sinemar because, and he's very persistent. Finally, he learns that the reason he wants to talk to him is because he's representing a Tibetan Lama, and the Tibetan Lama wants to meet Redu. Redu instructs his publisher not to interact with anybody, basically. But when he hears that it's a Tibetan Lama, he does say, I'd be interested in meeting the Tibetan Lama. Now, the man who is the go-between the Tibetan Lama and Redu is named Eleanor. He is a real character. The publisher actually talked to him on the phone, said his voice was very normal. He's a real character. He has never met Eleanor, but it was a real person on the phone. So a meeting is set up for Redu to meet the Lama. And he's to go to a neighborhood in Bucharest, which is in the embassy section, he's going to this man's house, Eleanor. Eleanor is... a very wealthy man, and he appears to be very young. He looks like he's about 30. Redu would actually find out that his driver's license says he's in his 60s. And Eleanor is an alchemist, and he is an alchemist that he works with principles that keep him young. And he has an entire alchemical laboratory in his basement in a very modern house. And I actually had the opportunity to go to see some of the houses in this neighborhood. They're really incredible. They don't build houses like this in America. You couldn't get they just don't build them. They don't have the mindset to build houses like this. They're beautiful. They're like kind of like labyrinthine and, you know, hardwood, and oh, it's just beautiful. The house I was in, anyway. So I recognized the neighborhood. But in any case, he goes into this beautiful house, and they're waiting for the Lama to appear, and they have a discussion, a long discussion about alchemy. And he learns of this tradition that Eleanor has been initiated in. It's quite, you know, that's the first chapter of the book. And when I read this chapter, because I had to de-scramble it from translated English into, you know, edited English, I said I would have paid the amount of the translation just to read this chapter. It was an incredible chapter. This is a real tradition of alchemy. And by this tradition, the aspirant might take him 300 years to evolve out of needing a body. He stays alive. You can stay alive physically for maybe a couple thousand years, but he says people evolve. It takes them about 300 years to evolve to the point where they don't need a body. but they have, in the course of living, they have to cover their tracks. Because if you live in one place too long and stay young for too long, you're going to stand out like a sore thumb. So you're going to have to move periodically and keep a low profile. So this is a very interesting tradition. And finally, towards the end of the night, the Lama arrives, and he's late. And when the Lama arrives, he is accompanied by a very strange creature called a Yidam. And in this case, Yidams have different description in Tibetan literature. In this case, the Yidam is about 7 feet high. He's very tall. He's very massive. And he doesn't talk. When he does talk, it's very, I wouldn't quite say it's a Frankenstein speech, but it's kind of like the Frankenstein monster. It's very measured and very, more. I think it's more telepathic. So anyway, as the discussion, they have another long discussion. And in the middle of the discussion, the Lama identifies himself as Dr. Zen. Dr. Zen was originally a Tibetan Lama who escaped the invasion of Tibet. He worked in Lhasa, in the Dalai Lama's palace. And he escaped into China, where he became venerated as one of their top people in paranormal. How he was able to do this is not explained, but it's mentioned that he has a lot of friends in high places in different governments. So he is there, and he brings this Yidam character so that he can prepare Radu, so Radu won't freak out when he sees him for the first time, because they're going to go on a journey. And a Yidam, by the way, according to this book, is the result of what happens when you create a sand mandala in a certain aspect of Tibetan Buddhism. You create a sand mandala, and the manifestation of it is a Yidam, which is an extension of the particular lama's personality. It's a facilitating aspect for a lama so that he can do things in other dimensions that his body cannot do. And the Yidam can facilitate functions. So they need the Yidam on this journey, what they're taking. The journey is going to be Radu, the Lama, and Eleanor. And they're going to go up into Transylvania to the Apuseni Mountains, where they are going to effect a space translation. And this will be facilitated by the Lama and or the Yidam. But the Yidam is there to protect them and to help facilitate the space translation. Basically, they telespace or teleport from Transylvania to Tibet. And they're in a very high, rarefied region of Tibet where you probably couldn't survive, except that the Yidam is controlling the environment, so it's warm enough for them. They go into a cave. First, the Lama goes into the cave, and then he comes out and lets Radu go in, where Radu meets this incredible blue goddess named Mashande. And Mashande is beautiful beyond belief. She's a Dakini priestess who lived in the time of Rama. And Rama, according to her, was situated, Rama and Sita. These are famous characters from the Bhagavad Gita. But it's told in the story how the flora of the area and perhaps some of the fauna that's described in the Bhagavad Gita would have had to exist in Romania, in the country we now know as Romania. So this was the antecedent to the Vedic culture. And she basically is there to give a parchment to Radu. And the parchment was from Padmasambhava. He was the great sage of Tibetan Buddhism who left certain what are called termas that were to be released at certain times and to help evolve the history or help the evolution of humanity. And so she gives him this parchment, and basically he has a lot of interaction with her. He takes it back. His job is to get it translated, to translate it. And then at the end of the book, he goes back up and sees her again. But this time it's in the Apuseni Mountains. And he has another encounter with her. And when they get there, there's a lot of kids, about 30 kids, who had dreams to come there. So they came there, and they were part of the experience as well. So that's a summary of that book, which is very fascinating. The Secret Parchment does not get translated until the fourth book, Secret Parchment, Five Tibetan Initiation Techniques. So that's an overview of the second book and some of the adventures. Now, the upshot of all this is that Dr. Zen has disappeared to Department Zero. They don't know where he is. And somehow Caesar gets interested in the fact that Radu has, wants him to find out where Dr., is interested in that there's his connection. So this is what helps get Radu recruited for Department Zero, where he becomes an official member. Whereas before he was sort of an outsider writing a book for them.
So now he's part, for the first two books, he was an outsider, but now he's been brought in and he's allowed to write another one?
Yeah, yeah. And by the books I'm doing now, he is like, him and Caesar are the arbiters of who goes in and out of that chamber in beneath the Sphinx. They are, it's the U.S. government has had to kind of take more of a back seat because they've had enough experience and realize that it's best for them to let Radu and Caesar handle this area.
Because they're the ones that are matching the energy to allow any of it to happen, whereas the Americans yes. would probably get fried.
Well, that had happened. And there are some positive experiences with Americans, but there was also problematic ones. And there was a certain huge arrogance on part of America, why when they discover these secret areas in Romania, like, how come you have them? We're the greatest country in the world. You shouldn't have these. We should have them. Overlooking the political fact that America doesn't have sacred areas. America took over sacred areas, took over the indigenous people. The Romanians are the indigenous people of Romania. They have not lost their heritage or their culture. Americans, or so-called Anglo-Americans, are bringing a culture here. And even the many of the other people who come bring cultures from outside, whether it be Italy, whether it be China. But the Americans have displaced the sacred areas, one of which is Montauk. They displaced the sacred area, and they disparage and degenerate the sacred areas. One of which is the Mount Rushmore is considered a huge desecration by the native culture because that's their sacred area, and they put the four presidents on it. So this is a problem for Americans to understand who they are and what the hell they're doing here. And
okay, you've been with the Romanians who are maintaining the knowingness of the connectedness between humanity and nature, and this that there are magical, but only magical because we don't maybe understand them. Maybe they do a little bit better than we do because we don't have these sacred spaces where you can walk in and feel it unless you go hunt them down and find them under some residential area. But when you were talking to these people, the Romanians themselves, do you detect something special or something desirable or different or you know, that imprint of anybody that happens to be that much more connected to all of life?
Do I discover something?
Can you, when you're with these people, is there some deeper meaning to them than what you see in America?
Yeah, it's a very good example. I was there in 2014. I was there twice. And the first time in May, I was there with my, what was to become my wife. I was visiting her. And we met an archaeologist who had been, the hotel owner had been trying to facilitate a meeting with me and this archaeologist for a long time. Finally, it happened. We had a long talk, and it was great. You know, we got along fine. Then I came back that summer, and there were specific things I wanted to do. And then one day, it was a free day between not only me and my friends that I brought with me. And this archaeologist showed up, and he took us to a cave. Now, this is traditionally what the Solomonari do. They will take you to a cave, and you will sit in front of the cave and meditate and be allowed to enter it. Usually this entrance is, you know, more interdimensional than physical. It could be physical, but it's an experience. And although he was not necessarily intentionally doing this as a Solomonari, he was acting out the role of a Solomonari on a very deep level. And he still, to this day, doesn't know the full extent of what he did. He didn't get to meet me last year because he had to go somewhere. I would hope to meet up with him this year. But this cave he brought us to was called Chocolavina Cave. And he explained some of the legends about it. But he also told us that it was known for its bat guano, and that the bat guano was so rich and so extensive, it was used for explosives. And Ceausescu had opened up the roadway to it. Now it is used for, the bat guano was used for fertilizing. It's very precious for using fertilizing crops like marijuana. So it's very sought after, and the government keeps it restricted. They've got a, you know, blocked off easy access to the cave. But it's a huge cave when you enter, but then you have to go past water. So unless you have boots and water equipment and cave equipment, you're not going to penetrate very far. But the energy of it is incredible and fantastic. When I got home, and I had my 6 months later or 8 months later, had my first interview with David Anderson, I had asked him, what can you tell me about Romania? He said he'd get back to me. And then he got back to me and he told me, Chocolavina Cave is the most interesting area as far as time travel goes, because it has evidence of having huge discharges of what's called space-time motive force, which indicates that time travel has taken place there and is the most significant area in the world. And I've written on this and have some videos on it. And I said, David, did you know I've been in that cave last summer? He was shocked. Like, what the hell am I doing with this cave? This man, this archaeologist who had befriended me, took me to that cave not knowing any of this stuff. He was acting with his own esoteric function. These people who lived in this area for years, it's a part of their soul. It's a part of their DNA. When he heard some of the stories of Radu, he says, these stories line up with other things I know from this valley. He sends drones through this valley. I told him he should send a drone into the cave. He thought that was a good idea. But this valley, he says, many of the people in this valley have had strange things happen to them, but they generally don't talk about it. Because many of these strange things have been tragic, where somebody died, somebody was in a cave, and they just don't talk about it, and they keep their mouths shut. But there's tons of stories, and I realized if I could speak the language and go up and down that valley, I could get story after story after story. In the end, however, they'd just be stories. So this cave is something I revisited because of what I learned about it. and I revisited it, and I found out that there was a another cave that we accessed that was a man-made cave, a mining cave, and at the end of it, there was a steel door. The next year, which was last year, I went back. But before I went back, I went to the Atlanticron camp, and I had met one of my old friends there who was very highly placed in Romanian society. And he said, as well as some secret societies, and he said I had told him the previous year about the Sola Minore. He didn't know what I was talking about. The following year, which was last year, he knew all about the Sola Minore, and he says, this is real. And he says, I went to the cave. He showed me videos of Ciocărlia Cave. He got in past that steel door. He walked in 3 kilometers with a group of about 40 people. He said one of the people disappeared. They couldn't find him. He came back with all sorts of strange experiences. And he recommended nobody go to the cave. It's very dangerous for that reason alone. He found huge bones, which he said belonged to a giant human. There were also bear bones. He was a naturopath, so he knew something about the anatomy. The video he showed me, you couldn't distinguish enough. He had no reason to lie to me. I asked him if he got in through his secret society connections, and he wouldn't say. He got in either through his secret society connections or through other connections, or it was just open. So it was like the cave was talking to me. The cave had opened up to me via a friend that I had told about the Sola Minore. It opened up to me. It was speaking to me. I had him do a presentation the last night of Atlanticron for me. And I got the permission of the director. So we got up there. And then when I went, I had 6 Americans with me. None of them showed up for the presentation. I said, why aren't they here? I told them all to come. I said, this is odd, but this is for me alone. So I listen to the presentation, which is short. They show the video. Then they have me get up and talk about it. They all wished me success on my trip, which was to be. There was a lot of drama generated around my friends on the trip. There was so much drama. None of them are returning with me this year. It is for me to do alone. There was a lot of, I guess what you call fallout from the people on the trip. I'm not going to take anybody with me on the trip this year because it creates too much fallout. I don't need that. I've had enough experiences there to see what happens. And I will go with some Romanian friends, at least one of who's been with me before on this journey. So when we got there last year, we were able to, the cave was locked. We weren't able to get into that door in that area. But we did find a campsite nearby where I will be staying this year and made friends with one of the locals who does a lot of cave exploration. So the cave keeps opening up to me. And this year I expect it to open up yet more. And just like I used to go out to Montauk to investigate, now I go here to investigate. And this is kind of where I'll be going this summer.
Well, remember where you're going, that there's 2 levels to it.
Indeed, there are.
And all you have to do is, respectfully ask to be allowed to see the upper level. Upper just because it's, upper, lower, right, left, whatever.
What I'm actually more interested in doing is going to this camp. And the way we found the camp was just by serendipity. We come to the fork in the road. To the right goes to the cave. To the left goes up into the mountains. And I said, somebody says, which way do we go? I knew which way to go. I said, that way goes the cave. They said, what's up there? I said, I don't know. Let's go see. So we drove up there. It got too hairy. It got too, the roads got a little bit too high. So we all decided we better turn around. So while the van's being turned around, there's about 9 of us in there. We turn the van around and we look down this hill, this gully, and we see all these kids coming up. And the kids, what the hell are those kids doing? And I have 2 Romanians in the car, and one of them says, those aren't Romanians. Go down and find who they are, find out what they are. They go down. They were Romanians. And they spoke English. Most of them spoke English. And they told us that they were scouts. And they were coming up to this camp. They go see the guy who has the camp. He knows everything about this area. So we went up, and they gave us Romanian hospitality. They gave us wine. They gave us lunch. This is just like beautiful. And he had a sign in English. It said, "Open Choclovina." I said, "What does that sign say, Open Choclovina? Why is it in English?" He goes, I don't know. I mean, he spoke Romanian. We had to go through a translator. He spoke a little English. But, you know, he says, "I don't know." He says, "You're the first ones to come." He had set up a camp for, and so this is like a home to me. He invited us back. I'm going to come back and visit him and spend time there and learn from the local people, learn from the local, one of the local Solomonari. And this is my intention, not so much to explore the cave, which might happen, but just to, you know, make friends with the people and have it open its doors once again. It's all part of a very relaxed investigation. And
just ask the questions, you'll get the answers.
I don't have to ask the questions; they'll just come. I mean, you know, they'll tell me what they tell me, and it's. I also hope to connect this camp with the other camp, if I can connect the two camps somehow. You know, energetically and otherwise, officially, so that they can cross-pollinate each other. That's one of the dreams I have. And it's because David sent me to Atlanticron. If I can connect Atlanticron with the camp near Choclovina, he would be very tickled, because that's his area of research. It's his area of research. It's also mine. So, you know, David sent me to Romania years ago, and he never expected me to keep going back and to start, you know, stirring this all up.
Or find your wife there.
No. He spoke to her. You know, actually, I had written to him on my birthday in January. I wrote to him in the morning. I didn't tell him it was my birthday. I wrote to him to tell him that I'd just gotten married to a Romanian lady. That night, he called me to congratulate me on my marriage. And we talked for about 15 minutes. And then I put him on the phone with my wife. It's the only time she's ever spoken to him. And he spoke in fluent Romanian to her. She was so impressed with his Romanian. She was so impressed with his Romanian. Then later afterwards, she apologized to me. She says, "I didn't mean to insult your Romanian. I don't speak Romanian. I know a few words." But his pronunciations were incredible to her. So, you know, he speaks, I don't know how he's really good with languages. I speak English. And I know a few words in Romanian, but, you know, that's about it.
We're getting to the last 2 minutes here. Why don't you tell people how they can get in touch with you and to get a hold of your books?
Well, it's most important that people check out the timetraveleducationcenter.com to find out about the books. Skybooksusa.com, skybooksusa.com. Books are also available on Kindle, iTunes, and Nook in ebook format. And you can write to me at petermoon333@gmail.com if you feel that it's important.
Barbara, do you have anything else at 1 minute to say or ask? Well, let me ask you this, Peter. Are you willing to come back next month? Same third Saturday, 6 to 8.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, I'm going to be pretty busy in July getting ready for the trip.
Oh,
so
that's true.
I want to commit at this time. I don't know how soon you need a commitment, but
the day before will work.
It's possible. You know, contact me. You know, around, you know, the second week of July, and we'll see how I'm doing.
We'll do.
And I'll try to accommodate you. I'd certainly like to, but, you know, I got to get so much done before I leave.
Well, if we don't hear from you when you get back, please let me know so that we can, you know, get back in touch with you, because you've got such informative and inspiring and really thought-provoking information to pass on to people. And everybody should be reading your books. So,
and I have a lot more questions to ask.
And she has a lot more questions.
Okay, and also keep your eyes peeled on my website for a possible documentary to air in August on Montauk.
Very excellent. Which one? The Sky
I can't
books?
Talk about which one.
Say again?
I'm not allowed to talk about it, but just to keep your eyes peeled for August. I don't know beginning or end, and that's what they told me. So I will announce it. I have to wait till they announce it. I can't announce it first.
No, I was asking you which website, because you've got the Sky Books.
TimeTravelEducationCenter.com.
Okay. All right. That's your primary one. I got it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Is there anything else you would like to say to the audience?
No, thank you for having me.
Oh, we're delighted. Dolly, how about you? You got something to add? Because we actually started a little late, so we got a little more time.
No, I really don't. Thank you for being a trooper and hanging in here for 2 hours talking, Peter.
I've done longer.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
There's that weird sound again. I don't know what's causing that. Somebody's mic. Somebody does something with their mic. Maybe. Okay, then. Again, thank you, Peter, for being here. Barbara, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Dolly and Nancy, and thank you, Peter.
Okay. Good night.
Good night, darling.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much.
Night, Barb.
Night.
Say what? Say what radio show. With no agenda. It's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong.